your weekly fix of all things of a mystical, philosophical and psychological nature. My name is Diana Azam, the weekly host of the program. I hope you're not too hot on this very hot day, or should I say very hot week. If you're listening locally, I think it's quite hot in all of Australia at the moment, or if you're streaming online anywhere else in the world when it's not so hot, then hopefully you're a bit more chilled, physically speaking. And hopefully this show, particularly in the meditation, we can be more chilled internally, emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually. So that's what this show is about. I'm glad you could join me tonight, or even if you're listening to the recording that's put up on the website, gnosticwaves.com. That's gnosticwaves.com. So tonight we are going to talk on the Revolutionary Psychology book, and we're up to chapter 25. So before I begin talking about the current chapter, I'm going to review last chapter, which was chapter 24. It was called The Psychological Song. And this psychological song is what we pretty much say to ourselves day in, day out. We could be conscious of it. We can be totally unconscious of it. It can just go in the background, like a background noise, background words that we say to ourselves. And it obviously has a strong effect on our life, because it's like our psychological song is like our inner advisor. And it's not just things that we say to other people. Like, we can complain to other people verbally if people will listen, but it's more helpful to be able to see what we're saying to ourselves. So like how our subconscious is speaking to ourselves every day. So these things that we repeat ourselves about our lives, our problems, our sorrows, this is our psychological song. And it keeps us stuck in a certain state, a certain level of being in our life. And we talked about the main ego, the main psychic aggregate that's responsible for this is our self-consideration. So when we consider ourselves over and beyond what's necessary for our needs, so in a more exaggerated way. And in this way, we're more liable to suffer and get hurt, because we will have certain ideals and expectations that we think should happen to us, and other people in life may not share that, and so therefore we will keep suffering because of that. So if we're unable to transform the difficult circumstances in our life, we get trapped in them, and then we keep recreating those circumstances, and it's not good for our health, for our physical health, or our psychological or emotional health, and definitely not good for our relationships. So in tonight's chapter, number 25, Return Recurrence, this follows on quite well from the chapter before, because it's basically reminding us or teaching us that things in our life are always reoccurring. They're always returning. The same circumstances that keep returning back to us. So as long as we don't change ourselves, neither will the circumstances in our life change. So perhaps we've identified what our psychological song is, the things that we're always complaining about, the things that we feel powerless about, then that's great to start to observe that. And then the next step could be to see how that affects and contributes to us attracting the same circumstances. So becoming more aware of those elements within us, those psychic elements that are causing us to keep attracting the same circumstances. And if we really want to change our lives, it's important, it's pivotal to be able to understand what is going on within our psyche, what's going on at subconscious levels, because it has a great effect on our life. And if we want to be more conscious, we have to become conscious of what is going on within us. So the crucial point in this chapter, Return and Recurrence, is that we have elements in our subconscious that seek out and create the circumstances in our life. And if you're hearing this for the first time, it can sound unbelievable. It can, to some people, may even sound reasonable, but understanding it as a theory or a teaching and actually observing it, this happening in ourselves, in our lives, is completely different things. And so it's really good for, I mean, I like to hear this repetitively because it reminds me that I don't know everything, that there's things that are still going on in the subconscious that I'm not aware of and it's affecting my life. So even if we've heard this before many times, if we're regular listeners and we've read about it, we've thought about it, and we've seen it perhaps, it's always good to hear it again, to remind ourselves again, because it can be hard to believe. And some of the examples that are given in this book, in this chapter, which I'll talk about later in tonight's talk, just sound like our life is a drama, a preordained drama, and that can be hard to believe, that we don't have as much control as we may think. This talk also is very similar in its subject to the last talk on the tarot number 10, which was about the same thing, returning, recurrence, the wheel of life. And so there are going to be parallels to that talk. And I think it's really interesting that they have coincided, this chapter, with the last tarot talk, maybe to do with the new year and, you know, making a fresh start, not wanting to repeat the same things, moving forward this year. Okay, so one of the points in this chapter that the author, Master Samael, says that if we don't modify anything within ourselves, if we don't work to change, to awaken consciousness, then we're effectively wasting our time. So what's life about if we're not here to improve, to awaken, to become more aware of our life and what's going on in it? So if we're not able to take these opportunities to work on ourselves, then we're wasting these opportunities. And really, the reality of the matter is most people are choose not to work on themselves, just to go with the current of life, the flow of life, wherever that may lead. And I was reflecting on why this is, if it is because people don't think they can change and so therefore they don't or don't try to, or maybe because it takes a bit of effort, a bit of work to do, and therefore it gets put to the too hard basket. So it's hard to know which one it is, if it's ignorance, people don't see beyond their own reality, don't believe in, you could say, in magic, in change, in transformation, because we need to actually believe that we can change, that there's something higher than ourselves that is wanting us, that's requiring us to transform from within. And if we think we're doing it alone by ourselves, it's possible, but I think it's a bit harder. I was talking to someone today about certain therapies out there that sound very similar to what we talk about in the Gnostic teachings on the psychological level, especially with the observation and the comprehension of what's going on inside of us. But a lot of those teachings, they don't hit the spiritual level. So they just stick with the psychological level and transforming it. And that is possible to transform ourselves and to change ourselves, but to really integrally change in our energetic constitution so that we can reconnect with our spiritual self, and also to really liberate ourselves from the wheel of samsara, of the continual wheel of living and dying, then we need to really go into that spiritual dimension, that spiritual component, for that help. I think if we're regular listeners, then you know what I'm talking about. So we'll just go to a music break. After the music break, I'll go more into a bit more into, you know, what happens if we don't really change ourselves, and those repercussions in our life and in our other lives. So I've chosen a track from a CD called The World of Dvorak, and it's just the first track, Symphony Number 9 in E minor, New World. So we'll be back in a short while. Okay, you're back on the Gnostic Waves. The track was getting a bit dramatic there. I had to cut it short because it's a 9-minute track. So I'm talking on the topic of Return and Recurrence, which is a chapter from Revolutionary Psychology, a book written by the founder of the modern Gnostic movement, Samuel Oenophil. And I was mentioning before the importance that the author stresses on working on ourselves on this life, because if we don't work on ourselves in this life, then we will come back in future lives and repeat the same circumstances. So this is what he talks about in this book. And I recently talked about this, as I mentioned, in the talk Tarot Card Number 10, Retribution. So if you missed that talk and you're interested in the tarot, then head to the website gnosticwaves.com. So that's GnosticWaves.com. And you can listen to the recording that's up there. It's definitely up there now. Now, in the book it says that death is the return to the very beginning of one's life with the possibility of repeating it again. So he's talking about the physical death here. So we teach in these studies that we have more than one life or existence. We exist many times. We don't always exist as human vehicles. We can exist as animals, plants, and minerals. So in this chapter, it says that we are always repeating these same circumstances in our various existences or lives, and that we continue in the seed of our descendants. So we come back to the same families to relive the same recurrences. And this makes sense because we are always forming bonds and attachments to the same people, and therefore we're going to have our karma is going to be linked to these people. So it makes sense that the people in our family we have had previous lives with, and that we return through the descendants. So say if your grandfather or great-grandfather has died and then you have a baby, it's highly likely that baby might be the same essence, the same soul as the great grandfather, or similar circumstances. It's interesting. You hear people talking about how they have a child or someone who, you know, displays very similar traits to someone that has passed in the family, and it's just really interesting. So the life of each one of us is like a living film, a roll of film, which at death we carry into eternity. And then when we return, so when I mean eternity, and this is possibly different to eternity in other schools or traditions, so there's a point where we can stay in that dimension, and then like a holiday, you could say, a rest, and then we return back into another life to, you know, go at it again and hopefully learn and awaken consciousness and not keep repeating the same circumstances. But, you know, if we do, then that's what we're doing. We're repeating the same dramas, comedies, and tragedies. And this is what is called the fundamental, like, point or axiom of the law of recurrence. So in each new existence, so life, the same circumstances are happening and the same actors are coming back, because these actors live within us. They are part of what makes up who we are, and we call them the different egos or the different psychic aggregates, but they are within us. So we take them from one life to another. Now, if we have problems accepting, believing in past lives or future lives, then we can still observe the recurrences that happen within one life. In fact, the Master Samael says that we can observe the recurrences in one day. If we really look at ourselves and observe ourselves within one day, we can see all the elements that mimic or reflect the circumstances in our life. So these egos that exist in our subconscious and express themselves at different times and in different environments are the actors that create our lives. And if we know about them and we know what their motivations are, what their desires are, what their logic is, and how they hope to achieve that, then we can work. We've got something we can work to change our lives. So particularly if we don't actually want our life to go in a particular direction, like no one really wants to suffer, do they? But we have to acknowledge that we most likely have elements within us that are going to create circumstances that are going to cause suffering, that are going to cause karma for one reason or another, and there's many different reasons. We may owe a debt to someone and we need to pay that off, or we're just living mechanically in the wheel of life and in a very unconscious way just to serve the economy of nature. If we can identify these elements within us, separate ourselves from them and observe how they're acting, what they are attracting, then we are able to stop the repetition of events, the repeated scenes of our life. And so then we can start to change. But we've got to identify what those actors are within us and disintegrate those actors. So these actors or eyes, egos, that we carry within repeat the same role from existence to existence. If we disintegrate it, then the actor dies. The role concludes. There's no play, there's no movie, there's no drama of whatever nature. When we seriously reflect on this law of recurrence, on the repetition of scenes in each of our existences, then we discover by means of inner self-observation the hidden influences that are at play. And the key word here is the self-observation, which we talk about a lot, particularly in this book, because you could say that's one of the main themes is we're trying to revolutionize our psychology and our lives. But to do that, we need to really observe what is going on to be able to start revolutionizing it and to become smarter to what is going on in ourselves. We can miss a lot of opportunities during the day to observe ourselves because, you know, we're getting caught up in what we have to do, the demands of life, the responsibilities we have with working, with looking after ourselves, eating well, exercise, looking after our family members. There can be a lot to do and it can be never ending. I think about cleaning. Cleaning is never ending. You can be cleaning for the rest of your life, so there's never going to be like a point. There might be like a second when everything's clean and then things start to get messy or dirty again, and that's just the law of entropy that we're dealing with. But we do need to at some point get a balance in our life where we're not just busy all the time, because this work takes some time, it takes space, and it takes, you know, looking inside of what we are. So I lost track there. If we are not able to do that in the moment of life, then we do it after we get home, our obligations have been met, and we can do some inner reflection there. And I was speaking to someone today, I'm sure they're probably not listening, but I won't mention names anyways, about how they are starting to become aware of this process where they need to actually look within, even writing down their thoughts and feelings, and that's a good way of becoming more conscious of what's going on within us, but that it takes time and most of us are just too busy, and doing this is we might see it as a bit self-indulgent. Well, that's what we're taught. We're taught like the busier we are, the better. But then we crash and burn, or we overdo it, and then our body gets sick. And so, you know, why wait until the body is forcing us to look within? And the sad truth is that is what we do. We wait till we get sick. We wait till something happens, and then we're like, why does this happen? And then we go and, you know, spend a lot of money to try and figure out, you know, go to this doctor, that doctor. And I mean, eventually, hopefully we find out what's going on at the physical level, but are we seeing what's going on in the psychological level or the emotional level and connecting them all together? And this is quite rare because, well, modern medicine doesn't really see health in that holistic sense. Well, some practitioners do, but a lot of the holistic ones are kind of separate to the mainstream medicine. And I was actually on a side note, I was reading about health insurance and how that there's new reforms to the legislation for health insurance, and a lot of the holistic type of medicines are not covered under that anymore. And I don't actually personally have health insurance, so I'm not sure what was covered before and how it's going to change. But it just shows that we can be so disconnected as a society from our physical health to our mental health and our emotional health. And for someone that is wanting to work on themselves and to become conscious of what's going on in our lives and how it affects our circumstances, they are inseparable. They're all inseparable. Yes, so we can observe ourselves at the end of the day, do a retrospection of our day, and to get an idea of what's going on and how our inner state has affected our outer state, our environment, the people in our environment, how they treat us, you know, the unfoldment of events in our day. So the Master Samael gives a couple of examples. I'm just going to read them out. He says, if in a previous existence, at the age of 25, we had a love affair, the eye from that liaison will indubitably seek the lady of its dreams at the age of 25 in the new existence. If the lady in question was only 15 years old, the eye of that affair will seek its beloved at precisely the same age in the new existence. It is easy to comprehend that the two eyes, so the two egos, both his and hers, seek each other telepathically and meet once again to repeat the same amorous adventure as in the past existence. He gives another example. Two enemies who fought to the death in the past existence will look for each other again in their new existence to repeat their tragedy at the appropriate age. If two people took legal action over real estate at the age of 40 in the past existence, at the same age, they will search for each other telepathically in the new existence to repeat the same. So this to me is mind-blowing, and I've read this before. I've read it multiple times, and I imagine these circumstances that repeat themselves don't repeat exactly as they did in past lives, but the same elements are still there. So there might be some variations. Like, it's not going to be, if there's a legal action over an estate, it may not be the same house. It can be like another property, but there's that conflict that happens that is a requirement, because each of those people, we assume, aren't working on themselves to change, still have those elements within themselves, and so they want to repeat that same drama. If they don't have those elements within themselves, then there's no actors in there to reenact those circumstances. That's the first thing we have to be aware of. But I mean, it's pretty mind-blowing how specific it is, or the Master Samael is saying how these recurring events happen. It's like clockwork. If at a certain time you had this event, then that thing will happen again in the next life at that time, unless we work to change. And yeah, this is just, to me, it just shows that we might think we have conscious control or will over what happens in our life, but it's possible that there are things within us that are attracting these things, but it's beyond our cognizance that it's happening. So as I said before, each of us has many different people within that have many different commitments at various times in our life. And it says in this chapter that the most grievous thing is that the intellect ignores the existence of these things within ourselves, of these commitments, and they're below the level of our reason. So we don't really see it first up. And it takes a while. It takes quite a lot of observation of ourselves to start to see these elements at play. We need to ask ourselves, are these things, energies, commitments, desires, do we agree? Do we want to fulfill them? Because if we're happy to, then nothing's broken. Why fix it? But if we are keep running into the same kind of difficult circumstances, then there may be a point we'll be like, okay, you know, enough's enough. Suffering, the same thing. Something, you know, needs to be learnt, needs to be changed. So I'll just read some more passages from the book. It says, there are facts that we ignore, things that happen to us, occurrences that take place in the subconscious and unconscious. So, as I said, beyond our reason, beyond our awareness. With good reason, it's said that everything happens to us, just as when it rains or thunders. Really, we have the illusion of doing, but we do nothing. Things happen to us, and this is inevitable, mechanical. So many things happen below the level of our cognitive capacity. Unfortunately, we ignore what happens below the level of our reason. To emerge from this misfortune, from this unconsciousness, from such a lamentable state as we find ourselves, is only possible by dying in ourselves. So dying psychologically speaking, not physically speaking. And so when we talk about having these actors within us, it's those actors and their roles that need to die. And something as a result of that is going to emerge. Something new will emerge. And not necessarily a new actor with a new agenda, a new commitment, but something of a more spiritual nature will emerge. And it will be more aligned with the values of our spiritual self, our higher self, and that is going to give us more peace and serenity in our life. Even though we may not know the big picture of what we are, we can work at it bit by working on things that we are not. So in the book it says, how could we awaken without first dying? Only with the death comes the new. If the seed does not die, the plant does not sprout. They who truly awaken acquires as a result complete objectivity of consciousness, authentic enlightenment, happiness. So this is what we aim to do through this work. The result of this work on observing ourselves and eliminating the causes of the characters in our life that create these circumstances is that happiness, liberty, freedom. Now, something I wanted to mention that came up in my mind as I was reading this chapter is we can develop a fear. Like knowing this, if we take it to heart, we can think, well, anything that we do in life could be a negative recurrence, can cause us difficulty, can cause us karma and, you know, repeating the same circumstances. But we can't live in fear. We can't live in fear of these circumstances. That's not going to help us overcome them if we just avoid life and avoid suffering, because we want to liberate ourselves from suffering, from these circumstances. But we may need to live through them a couple of times more to be able to have the opportunity to comprehend and to untangle ourselves from these scenarios. And yeah, that takes a couple of tries. I don't want to give it a number of how many times we need to do it, but hopefully we can overcome them in a lifetime. So we may attract the same circumstances within a lifetime and plug away at these egos within us and hopefully we don't need to repeat them in future existences. But yeah, it's not going to be as soon as we start practicing this work, we're going to stop all recurrences and not attract the same things. We're probably going to attract them again and again a few times before we actually, you know, sober up and work to transform our circumstances, but from within. So yes, don't fear the recurrences, I think, is what I'm trying to say. And that's from my own living experience of having experienced that. I don't advise that. Just go into the circumstances, but with consciousness, and that will be what will save you. If you make a mistake, learn from it. You'll probably keep making mistakes till the day you die, but always learn from it, and that is not a wasted event or circumstance. Okay, we'll just go to another music break and then we will continue with this topic, but we'll do a meditation practice. So we'll be back in a short while. Okay, you're back on the Gnostic Waves. That was another track from the CD, The World of Dvorak. That was track 2, Lago. I think it was a continuation of the Symphony No. 9 in E minor. Okay, we're going to enter into the meditation practice now, so I'll just get the meditation track ready. So getting ourselves ready for the meditation. So finding that position that we can hold for the next 14 minutes. Trying to let go of the circumstances of the day. With each inhalation and exhalation, just letting go of the events of the day. Just feeling good in yourself. Feeling content, there's nothing that needs to be done. The mind is trying to tell you what you need to do for the rest of the night, the evening, or the next day. You can just put it at ease and say, there's nothing more important than just being relaxing. So we always have our best insights from this point of serenity and relaxation. It's when the things that we know come to us just spontaneously, intuitively, naturally, as they should. There's nothing that we really need to force in this work. Because we're trying to connect with what's real, with the natural state of our being, of our consciousness. It's not something that's so unreal, that's so difficult, simple. If we like, we can do some transmutation of our creative energies. We can do it silently. We can do it externally, imagining that energy coming up from our creative organs, going up the spine. We can imagine it nourishing the different chakras that we have. The energy rests in the third eye for a short period of time. And then as we exhale, that energy goes into the heart. This can help us relax and reach a balance within the body. See it like distributing our energies equally around the body. So there's less stagnant energy, less blockages. And this is really helpful for any insights that we might have in our practices. Hopefully we're feeling nice and relaxed, a bit more zen than we were when we started. And we're going to do a bit of a retrospection on our day. In the short amount of time we have, it's not going to be a very long one. But I want us to find one of these actors within us. So we call them the ego. I'm going to call them an actor today, as per in the book we've reviewed, the chapter we've reviewed. And what is the drama that this actor wants to play out? So like we see when we watch a movie or a television series, we see actors and there's always dramas. We need to discover our own inner actor, our own inner drama. For example, when I'm driving in the heat, my air conditioner doesn't work because it causes my car to overheat. I start to create drama with other drivers. Drama that probably wouldn't exist if it wasn't so hot. But I can't blame the hot weather. The weather's just the weather. We have the capacity to see beyond these physical influences. I use the sun because it's a very common factor. It can influence how we feel greatly, for better and for worse. But life is full of these circumstances that we can blame. We don't want to blame these circumstances. We want to become conscious of the actors within us that are causing drama, intrigue, tragedy, comedy out of the circumstances of life. We don't want to necessarily judge them as good or bad. We just want to observe them. And when we can observe them, we can start to separate. And this is pivotal. So when we're observing these actors, we don't need to force the observation, because any insights that we can receive from the more higher parts of ourselves, the higher energies, they give us insight, they give us guidance that we need. Because we can't see events so objectively yet. So we rely on those insights. And we don't need to force them. We just need to open up a space within our heart, within our mind, to see things in a different way. And anyone can do that. Just time and space. And maybe a bit of patience. Of course, any of these practices is benefited by working with the mantras for the Divine Mother or the Divine Father. The chakras, anything that can separate us from our three-dimensional way of thinking. But tonight we'll just leave it there. So I thank you for your company this evening on this talk. The Revolutionary Psychology, Return and Recurrence. It's chapter 25. And if you want to look back on any of the other chapters of this book that we've gone through, then you can head to the website gnosticwaves.com. That's GNOSTICWAVES.com. And then I hope you can join me next week on the program. I bid you good night.